Okay, thanks. If everybody's ready, we can start this presentation right on. I want to speak about next generation peer-to-peer systems. And obviously, with the term next generation, I make myself quite vulnerable here. And I hope I can explain why I choose the title later on and why I speak about generations at all with peer-to-peer systems. My name is Magnus Kolber. I'm from the University of Bremen at the research group DIMSA, and we are mainly concerned with business models and that crap about peer-to-peer networks. I am from the machine learning context, machine learning field. We heard about machine learning, very excellent presentation from Gunnar Reitsch at Monday. My goal is to adapt and implement some machine learning approaches like clustering classification in the peer-to-peer field. So this is motivation why I speak here. Just want to present you some overview on interesting systems. You might know, some you don't. I offer some knowledge out of my view, out of peer-to-peer science, which is quite a different view than the normal peer-to-peer user normally has. I discuss some implemented concepts and approaches, address some challenges in the peer-to-peer context, in the peer-to-peer field, and show some measurement studies other scientists take, or I implement some small tools to measure peer-to-peer traffic, data contribution, and such stuff. I want to inspire you as an amazing crowd of developers, of peer-to-peer hackers, to implement such services I suggest you. Take part in peer-to-peer projects. And not finally, I want to ask you, as the usual peer-to-peer suspects, what you think of peer-to-peer. And finally, it's just fun here being here at the CCC. So this is the roadmap for this presentation. I will start off with an overview of science and peer-to-peer. I will talk about what a peer-to-peer generation might be. It's a very bad term, but it helps some way to focus on services. I will show you that later. These are very soft topics there. I will talk about challenges and concepts, about current trends in file sharing, what popular media expects of peer-to-peer, and what are the real trends there. Then finally, I would suggest some services from my machine learning context I address to be quite suitable for peer-to-peer systems. One example is out of a collaborative filtering with data mining, a special case association rule mining. I will talk about that and some prospects there. So this is the first very soft slide where I just want to show you the problem I'm basically in as a scientist in peer-to-peer at university. So there are two sides, and I expect you to know the systems on the right sides with Direct Connect, eDonkey, BitTorrent, and all that stuff. And the left side, these are approaches from science with maybe you know Edutella in the e-learning context, which uses metadata concepts and something like that, with Antle, which is a adaptation from swarm intelligence with small ants and LionShare, and finally the Jigsaw project, which is some kind of standardization in Java. And you see these two sides have very, very distinct tasks, very distinct philosophies here. You see the left side. When I talk about our university, we have a nice net infrastructure with wireless down all over the campus. I don't know if everybody have such nice infrastructure, but obviously file sharing is not allowed in that infrastructure with wireless LAN, the ports there, and you, when you use peer-to-peer networks, you're simply disciplined by the university, and so I have to deal with that. And on the other side, we have the peer-to-peer community. I use the term peer-to-peer community because my research group where I work is heavily concerned with communities, and peer-to-peer networks seem to be a special kind of community. There are other people say this is not really community. Everybody wants to stay as anonymously as they can, but I think these people are clutched together in communities like other virtual communities can compare them to them. In this case here, what's the philosophy here? Okay, we heard about BitTorrent and all this stuff and all the sites, and now video and music industry is aiming at BitTorrent. They are not interested in it in any way. And Supernova now is down and they are afraid, or all other sites are afraid. But what are peer-to-peer users doing right now? They're just switching to the next site where they get the trackers. So, and the torrents, obviously. These are just two philosophies in this area. Show you and how far this is a process. Yeah, you can't just say I'm on one side of this, but as a scientist, many people start here because they think, okay, they are interested concepts for peer-to-peer, look at scalable networks, look at distributed computing and all that stuff, metadata, semantic web, but on the other side, I'm really interested in connecting these two sides by looking at the peer-to-peer, what I call real peer-to-peer world. So the real peer-to-peer world is for me when a system works for three users, it has to work for millions of users. And where are these millions of users? They are obviously on the right side in the big system and not in the conceptual systems like Edutella. So I hope you need 3 seconds to see that this kind of generation rectangles are not very good. This is just an approach to show you how other people see some peer-to-peer generations. We can say, okay, there's an old school peer-to-peer, has ever been there, and we have phones and email, and the old ARPANET was originally structured peer-to-peer, but that doesn't bring us here any step further. We can say, okay, Napster was the first real peer-to-peer application, and obviously when you know the infrastructure of Napster, there was a single server, or a server space, and it's just mainly acting as a name server. So there's a communication between clients, but you always have to connect to the server. Now the server's down, the system is down. Edutella goes a step further, where you have no central organization in there, and this everything you need is some kinds of bootstrapping, and you get to another peer, you get all the net. We have seen the breakdown of Edutella recently, no, not very recently, so a few years ago, 2000, everyone expected Edutella to be their system in peer-to-peer, but as you see, it doesn't scale. Another system today is eDonkey, and these are the file-sharing systems, and we have the messengers with the ICQ and all the other crap there, and you say a special case could be distributed computing, but look at the famous systems in distributed computing, that's ZetaGrid and mainly ZT at home, and this is not really distributed computing because packages are sent to the server, you compute them, you send them back, this is not really distributed computing what you expect to be. So this is quite bad. And a better approach from my perspective is to think of services in peer-to-peer networks. So we can have these three rectangles I already spoke about with file sharing, communication, and distributed computing. So these are rectangles that are existing. I paint this in yellow scalability because from the concepts like short and can and pastry and tapestry, these are concepts you might have heard of. You already have scalable big systems. But on the other side, remember slide ago, there are the huge systems like eDonkey, Nutella, and BitTorrent and Direct Connect don't use much of these techniques right now. So this is in yellow. We can have scalable systems, scalable for data, scalable for the peers itself, for this data size, for the peer size. But on most systems, these very, very high level concepts are not integrated or adapted. We have services like reliability. So what is reliable? We can say data should be reliable. We should say peers should be reliable. Okay, we have rings of trust and all this stuff. But even reliability and anonymity is not really in the systems. So my question at this point is, what are the next services for peer-to-peer systems? And the question before is, how do we come to these services? My approach here is to look at the real-world systems and not look at the conceptual side. So we start here with just another soft slide. Don't be angry with me at this time. These are just the two GUIs. A web browser with a board of a community, and on the other side, a peer-to-peer community. What I just want to show you is what's the basis of these communities. I believe that virtual communities at all are a very powerful structure. When I look at Gentoo Linux, I don't read any FAQs or I don't read any manuals or something when I really got a question. I ask this question on these boards, or I just look it up in these boards, because the WWW net is so unorganized, so chaotic, you don't find information very soon with Google or something, but you find them very quick here. On the other side, what's the community basis for peer-to-peer communities? These are obviously files. So what I have to look at are files. And this is a commonly measurement study by Adam Humerman here. You might have known this. And this is exactly what the Wikipedia people talked about with the 80-10 rule. 10% of the users contribute 80% of the content. And here we have some other distribution here with 20% host, 98% of all the content. So there are different measurement studies. Some people, so when we talk about free writing, a free writer is someone who doesn't share anything. People say there are 60 to 70% that don't share. So this is very different on peer-to-peer systems, and on some systems force you to share files. So this is mainly based on some systems where it's like Nutella, where you don't have to share any files. Again, why are we looking at this? We have to look at the real structures of the peer-to-peer networks and really look how is data distributed, how are peers distributed, to think of what might be interesting services. I always can come up with some sort of service, but that simply might not be interested in for these networks. So this is a special case of how data is distributed. This is not a study from a peer-to-peer network. I just want to show you that this is called the ZIP distribution. You might know this. This is just the distribution how files or any entities could be distributed on a system. And you have this small law here, which I just want to show you. These files and data is not distributed randomly. So there's this correlation, this CDF. This is a log scale, and you have the probability that a document is on the system, and this is correlating somewhere with some rank, R to the power of minus B to the probability. So what I just want to say is a good example is the wealth among firms. So you have Microsoft and some other firms like Oracle make much money, but most of the firms don't make much money. So this is the same with data. On peer-to-peer networks, there are a few files. Well, very often in the system, but most of the files are one time, two times, three times, they are on the whole system. So when you make any protocols on new peer-to-peer approaches, you have to consider how data is distributed, how peers are distributed. So you can say it's equal how these two things are distributed, the systems just work. But as you see with the breakdown of Quintella, which was some years ago, these systems have quite a lot of failures. You know the Quintella protocol with the only feature TTL, which is 5 or 7, so the packages hopped 5 or 7 times. And this is what you can do on the Quintella network, is playing keyword searching and something like that. You don't select any peers. If you can broadcast, you obviously select randomly, or nearly randomly, the peers, so you have no central point of failure. But obviously, when there's no caching, or so when I disconnect off the network, all data is lost. So you are quite vulnerable to attacks, and you cause heavy messaging. And what's the biggest point here? The system just scales bad, so it doesn't work for millions of users because of the plain protocol. So where are the improvements? And where can improvements be done in the systems? This is first we can change the data structure itself. We can say, no, we don't can do this data searching with plain protocols like Quintella. We obviously have to adapt some kind of higher level data structures. That would be distributed hash tables, or you can do routing indices where you say, oh, I know this peer and I can route to them because I'm known in that stuff. Or you can look just at the graphs. You can say, okay, how does the graph look like? How does the protocol look like? You might know the small world effect or the term power law distribution. I will explain this on the next slide. What I don't want to talk about today is semantic overlays, but there's another chance to build up some overlay network on the physical network. We say, okay, this is a cluster of peers, this is another cluster of peers, and that stuff. What you also can do is choose some agent-based systems like Antil with swarm intelligence and adapt that concept there. This is the small world effect I told you about the last slide. There are two parameters. Firstly, obviously, you have to make a selection what world you are interested in, and when you say this is a mathematical graph, what are the edges, what are the nodes in the systems. So in P2P networks, this is not really complicated. You can say the peers are the nodes and the edges are the connection between two of them. So these are other worlds, like movie actors. So movie actors, there's a relationship. Have they act together in one movie? Then there's an edge between the two nodes. What is so special about these structures, about these worlds? So we draw the graph of such world, and what we can do about this, we could look at two parameters there. The first one is the path length, so that's averagely the shortest path between two nodes. So on all nodes you look, how much steps does it take to get to another node, and the other parameter is the clustering coefficient. So what does the clustering coefficient tell us? So when I know you and I know you, so how much is the chance that both of you know each other? So there's a high chance, averagely above all nodes, we have a lot of clusters. So if this cluster here, or this cluster here, and then a bridge to another group, and so these are what you see in the right picture there. We have some kind of graph which has a lot of clusters. So this, this is not the graph. So this is a graph that looks like more with a lot of clusters here. But let me skip back. So what I have to do if I want to know if some environment is a small world, I can draw the same graph with the same connectivity and compare these two graphs on these two parameters. And what these two parameters tell us about, that the characteristic path length in such graph, this is L actual compared to the actual path length of a randomly graph, it's much equal. So you see, for movie actors and L actual and a random and power grids, and this is bacteria. You say this is mostly equal, but the clustering coefficient on the small world graph is much higher than on the randomly drawn graph of same connectivity. So when you don't get it mathematically, you might get it by the Kevin Bacon game. Does anybody know the Kevin Bacon game? Oh, okay. We can play it after the presentation, maybe. So this is a famous game in the US, I think, where you want to make these correlations like movie actors, like I told you before. And what you want to do there is build a circle with actors. So you get every actor connected in such circles. So Kevin Costner played with Kevin Bacon, and Kevin Bacon played together with Tom Cruise. So at the end, when you just need six steps, you have such Kevin Bacon circle there. So the game is called Kevin Bacon Game because Kevin Bacon is playing in so much movies, he averagely just needs three steps to every actor. So this is everybody knows Kevin Bacon, but no one knows which movies he's playing in. So on the right side there above, we have some other small worlds or environments where we expect to be, that I expect to be small worlds. So these are the networks of worms, baseball players, power grids. And you might imagine how the correlation, the relationship is in these systems. And finally, this is a study of emails, and finally on peer-to-peer networks that are expected to be small worlds either. Now, what can we do when we expect we have small worlds in peer-to-peer networks? What can we do with it? Obviously, when we have Nutella as a protocol, we can't do much about it. But there are two things we can do. Firstly, we can just say, okay, we have this protocol, we have its algorithm, so let's adapt the 6 degree of separation to it, the small world. Another approach is we can build a system and want this to be a small world. A small world has a very low diameter, so we can jump to our other peers as quick as possible. So these are two approaches, and this is just a small example from a distributed hash table. What I can do about this when I, what I have to do in such systems, I have to make sure there's a key value translation in somehow. So every peer has some key, and we distribute the keys among the peers, but how are the keys distributed correlating to the values? So, and what I can do in this protocol is just say, okay, I know there are some clusters here and some other random keys, so I can build my protocol and say, okay, we need some more clusters around here and some keys among me to get such small world network. This is just an example, and I think we don't have a lot of time to explain that, but this is a good example because it is a real good working concept, but it's not integrated in any system, but in Freenet. Freenet uses a similar approach here, where there are peers who are responsible for a certain key space, and now the algorithm says, okay, I know this peer and I know his successor, so when you ask for a certain key, I know I can get you to that key. So, and this is in a ring here. So this is some kind how distributed hash tables might work on peer-to-peer systems. You always get the problem how you get the data, Britney Spears MP3, to a key. That's the thing you have to solute first. But basically, when you have this kind of translation, you can say, okay, this peer is responsible for this kind of key space. And you can say, okay, I know this key space, I can jump to the next key space and give you the peer who's responsible for that key space. Okay, I leave this because we don't have that time, I think. This is just an overview here of some scalable systems. When you want to look at other of them, this is CAMPASTI tapestry. You would say, what's the difference between all of them? So this was in a ring. The other systems use n-dimensional spaces and something. So at the end, you always say, what's the average in this system? And you see the differences are quite small there. On one, you get bigger caching. You can cache keys and something like that. On the other system, you have more search overhead. On the other system, you have more space overhead and something like that. So at the end, these systems all function very, very good on in their single space in simulation, but they are not implemented in real world systems. Same is with Jigster, which is just a standardization here, and it is used by Eduteller. But it's not used in a big system so far. So these are the applications that uses such scalable networks right now. So this was now on a very low level, on the network level. What I'm interested in is also look at the real world peer-to-peer systems and not just look at the concepts there. And we have some assumptions made by the popular media about peer-to-peer today, and this is obviously file sharing is on decline. There are not so much peer-to-peer users as there was 1 year before. And those nets are all about video and music. So video industry, music industry, we all know that crap. And what we obviously read all the time, that's eDonkey and Casa and all the big systems and who's the new leader. And obviously peer-to-peer is always illegal file sharing. And what I want to do here is make some system analysis and look for services in this system here. So this is a measurement study by CacheLogic, who are implementing tools for ISPs. And this is quite new. What you see, this is a whole traffic. So you might find it interesting that on which time there's a lot of traffic, and when traffic is rising, when it's falling. But obviously, what you see is these nets are all about BitTorrent right now. And peer-to-peer causes a lot of more traffic with a single system like BitTorrent than all the HTTP and other systems you might expect to cause a lot of traffic here. So this is just one study. And now we ask ourselves, where have all the peer-to-peer users gone. So obviously these traffic measurements that are taken normally to log traffic in any way don't function for peer-to-peer. And what you obviously know, these peer-to-peer applications today change ports very frequently. So there's no single port for a single application. You can use a system like Direct Connect with all kind of port you want. And systems or frameworks like Jigsta use some ports to get over firewalls and NUTs and something like that. And you don't know if this is really peer-to-peer. You have to look in the packages itself. You cannot say this is on some port, and you say this is an application, peer-to-peer application, or this is a SendMail server or something like that. So the final line here is this peer-to-peer is really not on the client, but it's hiding away from the logs. This is a study I make myself, a small tour connecting to the tool is called PeerMiner, and it's what is it doing? It can connect to Direct Connect hubs by contact. Direct Connect hub is some central place on a Direct Connect network where you can say it has some certain content and some certain rules. You can say, okay, you can connect to this hub if you share 30 gigabytes of data. Or you can say you have to open 3 upload slots for users to use the system. You might know the system, and I find the system very interesting because there are some kind of sub-communities in the system. You don't have all the peers together, but you can say this hub is about porn, and this hub is about some other kind of movies, and say this hub is about Britney Spears music. So there are different kind of users and different kind of communities, and you can say, okay, I'm just interested in them. Obviously, you can say this is crap because everybody can connect to any hub if you fake any data. That's obviously true. But obviously, you can say at least there is some kind of substructure in the systems. So what is PeerMiner doing here? PeerMiner is just a small tool, and it can connect to the systems and can extract data file lists of them automatically. What I'm interested in, how much video and music is in the systems, and especially I'm interested in, is there really music and video content only. And as you see the slides minutes ago, there are a lot of other data types in the system. You might wonder, how do I know if a file is a video file or a music file or some other file? I'll just use data file extension here, which is quite a plain approach. I'm right now concerned with other clustering methods and classification. So what are the other files in the systems? So there's a high diversity of other files. I don't want to show you this slide very long because you can just pick up some interesting approach if you can read this slide. I don't know. Can you read it all? So there's a high diversity of files, a vast amount of internet data, and web pages on the system. Does it make any sense to have a web page shared on the system? You might think about it, but my final line is here: this is too much data to ignore them. You cannot say these systems are just about music and video files. So there's so much data shared in the system. So what are services for such communities and such peer-to-peer networks? If you say these networks are not about one single data type, file type, and what I suggest today, or what I really believe in, that we have to look at some services who work for central systems like Amazon, you know the system, the users who bought this book also bought this book. You may find this annoying, but Amazon really believes in this system because they say it works. Users try to look at the books if they get such recommendations of other books. And what I expect to be peer-to-peer users, there are peer-to-peer users who will be annoyed by this, but the system and the service itself is quite interesting. So when you say this service is not very interesting, you can always say the knowledge is interesting. You don't have to make recommendations, but there's no. But Amazon is a big shop and knows some rules of the users and can say, okay, these users buy ice cream from Schöneberg on Fridays. But when you open a small online shop, you obviously don't have such knowledge. And where do you get this knowledge? You get it best on the huge systems where there are all kind of products. When I say, okay, these files could be products. So if you have such an idea, you can say, okay, I try this out. I make some recommendation service for peer-to-peer networks. So how do I get these recommendations in a peer-to-peer network? First, I can ask a user. I can say, you bought this product. Tell me how this product is or what other products you prefer. So users don't like this, as you know. And okay, this is just a slide with the Amazon recommendation service. You might just find interesting here. This is about Coldplay and obviously users who buy Parachutes. The Parachutes CD from Coldplay might want to buy the other CDs from Coldplay or might buy Lost in Translation. So this is quite interesting for Amazon for the other users. I would just want to show you that. And this is a question I spoke about. Do we really need this? Do we need this recommendation service? Do we need knowledge discovery in the systems? This is a big question, and I just cannot say no to this immediately. I just have to test it. And now, how do I get these recommendation services here? One thing is you can use some network structure like Bayesian networks and model based with decision trees where you have some classes and classification, or you can say we can clutch all the users in some group and we look at how's the average of this group and what are they buying. And the simplest approach here is to use association rules. I will show you what an association rule is right now. This sounds easy, but when you think of a peer-to-peer structure and you know the concept of association rule mining, you first ask how are the rules mined in a decentralized network, because you have a sequential mining structure algorithm that's working perfectly even for hundreds of data, but when there's no central system, you don't know all the data files. So these are the challenges here. You have to have some kind of mining strategy. You have to extract the data. And you obviously have to validate some tests and training sets or something like that, or use a data algorithm which is scalable, which is dynamic, which is ad hoc, asynchronous, and suitable. So these are quite a lot of challenges for distributed data mining for recommendation services. So this is a typical association rule mining slide here, where we have an example. You have a transaction base with certain items. You have beer, Linux, honey, and wine, and such items. And you have a transaction, another transaction, and complete. You have a transaction base. So what I can do with this? I can say this item has a certain support. What's the support? It's just how frequent this item is in the system correlating to the total base, total transaction base. So you just have to count Linux. This is 4 times in out of 5 transactions here. So you can say this is a certain support for Linux, but with this kind of frequent items, you don't have any association rules. What you have to get at the end is some confidence on the rule and an implication. An implication would be, if I bought Linux, I will also always buy beer. So that's a perfect association rule, and I have to look what association rules are there and how confident are they, these association rules in the systems. Now, what they're quite well known algorithms for this. You say you take all the frequent systems here and all the frequent items, and then you build another frontier set and build all the items there, and you have one item sets, two item sets, three item sets, and I've this is all on the slide, but this is just a graph that shows you this. How you generate these item sets. You first look at the item sets beer Linux, and then you say item sets beer Linux together. When I buy beer and Linux together, do I buy another item? So this association rule, beer and Linux, when I buy beer and Linux together, I always buy wine. So this is the algorithm here mainly, and so I hope you understand this at this point, and you understand that this algorithm here is can be easily placed in a system when you have all the data. In peer-to-peer systems, you don't have all the data, so you have the challenges here. So I don't can sequentially go through this basis. I don't have any central processing. I don't can use broadcast, and I don't have synchronization between my peers. So I don't can synchronize the rules. So what I have to do here is have some autonomous behavior of every node, and I have to concern that the information itself is never up to date. And there is an approach by Wolf and Schuster which suggests some sort of local voting in a peer group. So you have some peer group where peers know each other and can exchange some rules very frequently and make some majority voting. So they have all some rules, and if some voting is placed on the system in a certain time, we can say this is a valid rule for our peers. You have a question? No. This is very complex. From the time that I have, I just want to show the results of this approach I did here. So again, this is a direct connect network. I already told you about it. This is just a GUI and some clients. I prefer this Wagner client, which is formerly called DC GUI, and I already told you why I use this direct connect network here, because I can separate between different kind of hubs. So my approach is this here, to use peer miner to connect to a hub. So when I connect to a hub, I can use the data list of the peers and put them in some local database. I don't want all the files, I just want movies in this case. So there's a big problem here, because firstly I have to make sure that I have some kind of data universe. I can't do all the files. I have to concentrate on some content. And on the next slide you will see, I will concentrate on some certain movies. So this filter just gives me some certain movies, so I have to work with regular expressions and some kind of stuff. If you're not interested about it, I have this local database with some kind of data in it, and now I can use the association rule algorithm about it and put this all together back as association rules. So the simulator itself is, so the system is now limited to simulator. I get the data list statically and say this peers are exchanging this kind of data on the simulator. Why am I doing this? Okay, I can't obviously change the client itself. I have to make simulation right now. The other approach would be I make this every minute or something on the clients. So this is just some example for my study here. I choose some kind of hubs by an expression where they're called movies to get enough movies of that kind in the system. You might say, "Ooh, this data. I don't want to touch this data." But as you see here, this is just the data that comes first when I connect to these movie hubs. So this measurement study is not so recent, so the movies here are a bit old, but these are the most frequent movies in the system. I just choose some movies here, like Mystic River or Kill Bill, and I have 131 instances here, so these are not very few, just a few instances. And I just chose just a few attributes here. So I only have 10 movies. When I choose more movies, I don't get any good popular rules. And you might see what rules are there in the system. You might want to ask, how do I define that a rule is interesting? What I obviously have to do is make some support, minimum support. So I say a rule is interesting if I got this minimum of support and this minimum of confidence. Where do I get this parameter from? I have to be an expert on the system, or I just have to try test and error. And these are just some rules here. So one rule is when I don't have Love actually on my database, I have Mystic River and I don't have Kill Bill. You might say, "Ooh, what can I do with this information right now? It's totally boring." Okay, this is just a test right now. And obviously you have to say, are these rules really interesting? Does they make sense in any way? Yes. Yes, but then you have to make sure you get a small world peer-to-peer network, right? You're right, absolutely. That's a very good point. Okay, ask a question.
How do you identify those files? How do you know it's Kill Bill or Mystic River?
That's a big problem here, obviously. I already said in a very good case, all files have the same name, so I have to use regular expressions. I have to say, is this Kill Bill or something like that? It's a very different task here, but you're totally right. I do this just by file name. If the file name is Kill Bill, and somehow this is for me Kill Bill. Obviously, you can say, what you have to do is compare the file sizes. And that's very good of movies. That's why I chose movies and not music here, because movies are often zipped with some kind of, so you have some kind of 700 MB AV file or so. So this fits on one CD. So a movie files always have, not always, but often have the same file size here. So that makes this easier on movies. But the question is absolutely right. You just can come to all that stuff here.
And do you use the absolute file name, including the directory name, or
yes,
the file
name? I use the directory names as well. Yes, yes. But that's obviously a good question. Yes. Yes.
For people who don't speak this language.
Yes.
And I think it's very hard to. It's a good idea, but.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I think it's very problematic to get. For example, a movie together with subtitles, and without subtitles, many movies are worthless for many people who don't speak this language. And So I think that the approach is very good, but it would be very hard to release it, especially for releases with many files.
You're absolutely right. And this kind of rules, to get these files of type of groups, is already very hard, I can tell you. Okay, so this is my final slide here. What I'm working right now, implementing this this ARM association rule mining in peer-to-peer networks. This is mostly done by simulation, getting the file lists. I look at the social structures in the systems. I'm interested in this distributed hashing I told you. So this is enough work for some years, I think. Other interesting concepts would be to build more accurate peer-to-peer simulators. I'm looking for some student at my university to write a master thesis about this. And that's what is always interesting is to look at some measurement studies of other peer-to-peer systems and not only Direct Connect. So this is the summary of my presentation here. I talked about scientific peer-to-peer, about current trends, scalability and routing. I don't talk about too much about coding resources because time was not there. I talked about novel services and finally about the special case here, association rule mining. I hope you find this interesting in any kind. Thank you for your attention.
Excuse me. In the beginning, you said you were concerned.
Sorry, I don't see you. Okay.
You were concerned about the lack of anonymity of current P2P applications, and you addressed this talk and also your work at the community, which is rather concerned about privacy. And then you can come up with a user profiling application as the next killer application. So what the fuck? Why?
You misunderstood me at the first point. I'm not concerned a lot about privacy because my goal is just to implement interesting services for the system. I just address the problem for everybody who is working on peer-to-peer scientifically.
Okay, so, to whom do you think this is interesting?
I think it might be interesting for some systems who are not concerned with the illegal aspects here. Like, think of e-learning systems and something like that. But I can make a study on e-learning systems peer-to-peer because there are none. So I have to start with the file sharing system. That's, I think, a logical approach here.
Do you have a solution to share the recommendation data among the users? If I want to use recommendation data from other users, how do I get it?
Obviously, that's an overhead on the protocol itself. So that's why I use simulation right now. You have to make this in some way in the protocol of the peer-to-peer network. And this is the approach of Wolf and Schuster. When you want to get more information about that approach, I can tell you this is the email address here. And we can speak later on.
Okay.
Okay. I use Skype with my girlfriend since 2 weeks. That's all I can tell you about Skype. I'm sorry. It's an interesting system peer to peer, but I didn't make any research on it. I'm sorry. You're right. It scales well, but it's not file sharing, so I can do any association rules on it. But you're right. I should be more interested in Skype from a technological side. Yes? Okay. It's popular, right? Okay, thank you for your attention. Thanks.